Parsha. Now we look at these last few parshios in Sefer Shemos, Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Tehudeh, and sometimes we think of it as just like a single unit. That's the Mishkan stuff, you know, like all of it is just like one mess of Mishkan. They actually can be very easily classified. Truma is very clearly about the Mishkan and its Kelim, Tetzaveh very clearly about the Bigdei Kohuna. But there is one very, very notable exception. After it goes through all of the Mishkan's structures and Kelim, and even after describing all of the Bigdei Kohuna, once everything is done, the Torah goes back to discuss the Mizbeach HaKetores. And that seems a little bit odd. Why would the Mizbeach HaKetores be last after not only all the Kelim, which is one thing, but even after the Bigdei Kohuna, after everything is finished, after every detail of every element of what's required in order to make a Mishkan and dress the Kohanim, all of that, then we discuss the Mizbeach HaKetores. Furthermore, this week we read Parshas Zachar. The Torah doesn't just describe when Amalek attacked us, but the Torah describes where Amalek attacked us. And the way the Torah describes where Amalek attacked us is somewhat strange. Because if you want to say that something happened in a location, normally you describe that location. But the Torah says, Amalek attacked us, Bitseischem mi Mitzrayim, when we were out of Mitzrayim, or when we left Mitzrayim. The truth is, we were already on the road for some time. By the time Amalek attacked us, we were not just out of Mitzrayim. It wasn't the second we left that right away there was attack. We must have been somewhere at that time. There must have been some name to some place that was closest by at that time. Why would the Torah describe it as Bitseischem mi Mitzrayim rather than just say where we are if you want to describe the location? And third, Amalek's attack seems to have been very carefully planned and premeditated. The Mechilta Rabbi Shmuel, the Medrash tells us, Rabbi Yehuda Anas Yomer, Chamisha Amim Impasa Amalek Uba Lihilachim Im Yisrael. That Amalek had to go through five other nations in order to battle us, in order to fight us. And yet, when the Torah describes Amalek fighting the Jewish people, Asher Karcha Baderach. Oh, they happened to run into you on the road. You know, it's like a drunk mugger. You know, he was just walking around. And he saw a potential victim, so he took advantage of an opportunity. Karcha just happened to be there. No, that's not at all what happened. This was a premeditated attack. It was very carefully planned. They figured it all out in advance. Why would the Torah describe that as Asher Karcha? So Chazal tell us that we're vulnerable to the attacks of Amalek when Rafu Yudeha Midivrei Torah, Nasu Mirafidin, when we weaken ourselves from Torah. It's very interesting. If you describe someone who's not learning up to potential, what would you say? He is being Mevatel Torah, Rafu Yudeha. They weakened their grip on Torah. Sounds more like we just don't have the energy to learn and things just sort of fall apart. They sort of just become Hefker because we haven't energized ourselves in Torah. And the truth is, the way most human beings work is that we crave and we need a certain sense of structure. We need a certain sense of regimen. You know, I was just talking to some of the people in charge of attendance at different things in the yeshiva, you know, and they're saying, like, you know, people, there are guys that graduate, whatever colleges, whether it be Lander College, Yeshiva University, whatever, places that have, you know, Minyanim and Seder and whatever, and it's honest, sincere guys who just, they can't pull themselves out of bed for davening, they can't, but the second they get a job, and all of a sudden, like, they're, you know, you see them at the regular Minyanim around the neighborhood, every single day, like clockwork. What happened? What happened when they got a job? So, on the one hand, you somehow question whether the Yira Shemayim is up to par with the Yira of not getting a paycheck, okay? But aside from that, having a certain structure in your life where you're expected to be somewhere and someone's going to be, you know, and there's consequences. You know, people always say, I don't want anyone breathing down my neck. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. I don't want to have to be here at this time. I always look forward to vacation. Why? Vacation is the all structure falls apart. I can do whatever I want. I just want to relax and do nothing. But the truth is, if we spent our whole lives relaxing and doing nothing, we'd be miserable. We need structure. We crave it from the youngest of ages. Children, more than adults even, crave structure. And, you know, we say that we look forward to a lack of structure, but it's not true. And if we look at the most productive people in the world, they tend to be very regimented. They tend to have, to not waste energy on silly things, not waste time on silly things. They cut out useless decisions. A lot of, I think, one of the books I read recently, they say some of the most successful people, they have a seder with which they wear their clothing. Like they just, so that they don't have to think about what am I wearing today, it's just the next shirt up in the closet. Not to even waste the energy on thinking about these things, because everything is organized, everything is planned. Rav Chaim Kanievsky spends 3 or 4 hours each morning between about 2:30 a.m. and 6 a.m. doing his version of Daf Yomi. Okay, his version of Daf Yomi is 7 blood of Bavli, a few blood of Yerushalmi, sections of Medrash, Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, because he wants to finish Kol HaTorah Kula every year. Now, wouldn't you think to yourself after a while, he knows it already. He's got it. He doesn't really need to review. Write another book. You know, why does he have to? He has to wait for another Beis to write another Sefer. That's what he said. Why do you have to do that? Just write more Sfarim now. You could be so productive. But like most great people, he's extremely disciplined. And it's only because he knows how to be so disciplined that he has such a strict regiment that he refuses to compromise, that allowed him to become who he became. It's within that context that we achieve greatness. Dr. Pelkovitz often points out a study that was done in by researchers who, I guess, have free reign to torture people. And the subjects were volunteers who were put into a room with nothing to do. They had their phones taken away from them, which right away, you know, in our day and age, phone taken away, oh my God, what am I going to do? They had their phones taken away from them, and they were put into a room that had nothing there. There was nothing in the room except for an electric shock machine, where you can give yourself electric shocks. Minor electric shocks, it won't kill you, it will just hurt, jolt you a little bit. And they were left alone in the room for 15 to 20 minutes, just to see what would happen. Without a phone, without a book to read, without anything to do, no TV to watch, nothing to do, no, electric shock machine. More than 60% of the men shocked themselves. Only about 20% of the women did, because women are about 3 times as smart as men are. But the idea is when we have nothing to do, we're miserable. We can't handle nothing to do. We need something to do. Amalek attacks, according to the Medrash Tanchuma, by drawing us out of the Anan, out of the Anan Yaakov. The Medrash says, "Va'amad chutz la'anan vayakori lehem, Ruvain, Shimon, Levi, Tetsu, Shani Achichem, Verot Zalasus Yimachem Ischar." They stood outside of the Anan saying, "Ruvain, Shimon, Levi, come on out. We want to do business with you." And then as soon as they came out, they would attack them. And there's symbolism in that. When we leave our structure, that's when we're vulnerable to Amalek. As long as we're within the four walls of our structure, we're living our lives within that that Anan, we're not vulnerable. And that dovetails very nicely with the notion that the Yetzer Hara is lepesach chatas rovetz. It's crouching at the door. Why is the Yetzer Hara crouching at the door? Why doesn't he just come inside and get us? Because he can't. When we are within our structured lives, the Yetzer Hara has no power. It's when we leave that structure, the Pesach Chatas Rovetz. Haman works on a Goral system, which is not a system at all. It's a lack of a system. It's chaos. It's a lack of order. It's randomness. That's where Haman is able to achieve. When we defeat Amalek, we're required to destroy all of Amalek's possessions. We're not allowed to loot. Looting is not permitted. It comes to other wars, v'achalta shlalei vecha. Sure, go ahead. Loot. Take whatever you want. You ever see videos of looting after, like, a team wins a championship or some sort of riot or whatever? People, it's chaos. People are running all over the place. When we defeat Amalek, there will be no chaos. We destroy it all. There is no running around and grabbing things. We remember the mitzvah to destroy Amalek. How? By reading Parshas Zachar. Minag Yisrael. Whether it's correct halachically or not, Minag Yisrael is. When we read Parshas Amalek, it's done with extraordinary precision. So much so that we think the Gra might have said, even though Chaim V'Lashon doesn't think he ever said, Zecher instead of Zecher, and what does all the Klal Yisrael do? Read it twice. You got to make sure you get it just right. Exact precision. That's how we deal with Amalek. by bringing us back to lives of precision. Remember when I was in Yeshiva, when I was in Keren Biavne, they leaned Parshas Zachar, I think, like 6 times. They had like every Havara, every whatever, except for like the normal like Ashkenazi American one. Like, it's like none of those sound familiar to me. But the idea of the precision is maybe something behind that Minhag Yisrael. In fact, you know, we think of Purim as a day of chaos, but if you look at the halachas of Purim, it's actually a day of tremendous precision. Hearing the Megillah is very, most of the mitzvos of Purim are mitzvos that we have throughout the year also, but they're just defined more precisely on Purim. You know, that we read from Ksuvim, so we read Haftarahs throughout the rest of the year. But normally we don't do it with such precision and such care. The rest of the year, when we read from Haftarahs, we read from the Nevi'im. Okay, so the Kiddush Club is up to their third L'chaim already, and this, you know, and half the place is asleep. And I remember my Chavrusa Rav Razor was saying once that they were reading, I forgot what Haftarah it was. He said it was like the most inspiring Haftarah. And he was like so into it. And he said he was back in the day, he looked around the shul to see like who else is enjoying the Haftarah as much as him. And he was like, it was very disappointing. Like half the place was asleep, fiddling around with. No one was really. But when it comes to Purim, we read Mikra Kodesh, we read Ksuvim, and it's with great precision. We don't miss a single word. You know, Matanos Lavyonim. Matanos Lavyonim is not like this brand new idea. We have a mitzvah throughout the year called Tzedakah. It's just not so clearly defined. On Purim, it's not. We're told exactly how much to give, who to give to. Mishloach Manos. We're always supposed to be good and friendly people. We're always supposed to be nice neighbors. But again, how much to give, exactly to who we give. And that which is normally very loosely defined comes into much sharper focus on Purim. And even Chayiv Inish Levesume Ad Delo Yada. I think that fits this idea beautifully. Because if a person lives a regimented life, when a person forms good habits by day in, day out, over and over again, forming good habits, it frees our minds to achieve and to enjoy. Meaning, when a person develops good habits, you no longer have to think about those habits. They become second nature, and our creativity becomes greater because we're able to use our mind to do a lot more. Rav Moshe Weinberg recorded the story of Yogi Berra. I know it sounds funny, but Yogi was in a terrible slump once, and the Yankees brought in a special hitting instructor to help him through the slump. So as he was going through this instruction, his hitting just got worse and worse and worse. And they asked Yogi, you know, how come the coaching is not helping? And he says, I can't think and hit at the same time. And like most yogiisms, there's profound wisdom in that. I can't think and hit at the same time. Hitting has to be from muscle memory. See the ball, hit the ball. Thousands of times swinging a bat before. If he's thinking about the torque of his lower body and the positioning of his wrists, it's going to be very hard to just see the ball hit the ball. It's going to be that much more challenging. It's important to repeat positive behavior enough times that the positive comes without thinking, and the thinking could be reserved for other things. Chayiv inish levesumei b'paraya ad delo yada may not be the obliteration of all structure, but the proof that our structure is so strong that even when we're the sume, we're still able to say the right things, do the right things, fulfill all the mitzvos. Our disciplined lives became second nature. I was just, this past Shabbos, had the opportunity to talk a little bit to Rav Tzvi Koshelevsky, who I don't know if any of you know, but he's a major Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, a genuine Gadol B'Torah. And Rav Tzvi was telling me that there's Yerushalmi, I haven't looked it up yet, but it says there's a Yerushalmi that says that when one gets drunk on Purim, they're supposed to say, "Bruchim hatzadikim va'arurim harishayim." So he says, "What's pshat?" The Gemara says in Megillah, you're supposed to get drunk ad delo yada bein arham lebaruch Mordechai, and now you're supposed to say "Bruchim hatzadikim va'arurim harishayim." So are you supposed to have the clarity or not supposed to have the clarity? So she said the Gemara is very clear. The Gemara is very careful, rather in its lashon. It's Adelo Yoda Ben Aram Lebaruch Mordechai. You get drunk to the point where yidia isn't there. It's not based on knowledge. It's not based on your reasoning, intellectually figuring out, assessing the qualities of Haman and Mordechai and figuring out who's great, who's bad. But we're proving that it's second nature that we fully understand. Bruchim HaTzadikim Ba'arurim HaRishonim. We're supposed to say it because that's part of who we are. That's part of what we know. It's part of what comes out intuitively. We're not Yoda Ben Aruham LeBoruch Mordechai. We can't even explain it because we're so drunk. But we still know it. Because that's what happens when we're trained properly. Everything in the Beis HaMikdash is strictly regimented. The type of clothing one wears, the gender, age, and type of animal brought as a korban, the location of the avodos, and even the thoughts you're allowed to have while doing the avodos. And it takes a lot of hard work to achieve these various avodos and lots of mesiras nefesh. The clothing and the animals, these are expensive things. But after all of it's done properly, we don't just end up spent and exhausted, we're invigorated, and we're ready to smell the sweetness of the ketores. The ketores is really a few inexpensive spices that provide this like incredible aroma for the entire surrounding area. And perhaps it represents the payoff for living lives of hard work and precision is the ecstasy of that achievement, of that enjoyment. And maybe that's why the Mizbeach HaKetores comes last. Because the Mizbeach HaKetores represents, in a certain sense, the ultimate payoff. When we're organized and purposeful and regimented, we ultimately get to experience that geschmack. And maybe that's why Amalek is described as attacking us, b'tzeischem mimitzrayim. It's not about where we were when they attacked us. It's about the fact that we were no longer in the same home that we had been in. We had left our previous home. We didn't have a place anymore. And when we don't have a place, when we don't have that structure, then Amalek is ready to attack. And that's perhaps why the Torah describes Asher Karcha. Not that Amalek wasn't premeditated. Of course they were premeditated. They had to work through five other nations to get to us. But they attacked us with the notion of Keri, with the idea of randomness. And when we succumb to Hefker and happenstance, that's when Amalek wins. When we're just living lives by what feels right in the moment, and we have no sense of responsibility, we have no sense of this is what I do day in and day out. I look around, I see, it's so true, the most successful people. You know, some of my friends who are the most successful in their field, partners in major law firms, they exercise X amount of time a day. They do, you know, there was an interview with President George W. Bush recently, where he said that when he was president, he exercised for an hour a day. Just like stunning. Like, how on earth does the president of the United States find an hour a day where he says, don't bother me. Don't bother you. Like, what could be going on there? But you know what? Sometimes when a person has a schedule where he's so clearly organized and he has where to be, when to be, they'll find that they have time for everything. And that ultimately, that's going to help him achieve as much as he possibly can to maximize a person's potential. And that's the true defeat of Amalek. Okay.